It's yet another appalling example of BBC bias, this time involving Donald Trump. Our reporter Gordon Rayner will reveal how the BBC doctored the US president's words ahead of the January the 6th riots to make him look like he started it all.
This is the latest in a long line of scandals at the corporation. Is it time that Tim Davie, the director general, take responsibility and resign?
It's the dishonesty of we're resolutely impartial when everybody knows that on many different occasions, they've proved themselves to be completely the opposite. This is what gets me. It's the hypocrisy of it. Mm. We're all above everybody else. You know, the media show, we'll opine on the state of journalism. The media show should literally just be dedicated to the mistakes the BBC makes. And I return to the Telegraph, Tim, to the newsroom amongst a degree of excitement, because Gordon Rayner, who joins us in the Daily Tea studio, has got a scoop that will blow a hot blast of air up your trouser legs.
It is, wow, it is leading the website, Gordon, and it all starts with an internal memo at the BBC.
Yes, so what I've got here is it's a 19-page, effectively a letter come memo written by a chap called Michael Prescott, who until June was an independent advisor to the BBC's Editorial Guidelines and Standards Committee. So they're the sort of arbiters of impartiality, effectively. He'd been on that committee for 3 years. He was appalled at what he saw. He felt that the BBC wasn't doing anything to address bias. And so in this letter, he has set out all the examples of bias that he thinks he saw during his time at the BBC and all the things that all the times they failed to do anything about it. And he's alerted the BBC board to this in the hope that they'll take action.
And the one which is going to make global headlines relates to Donald Trump's words on January the 6th.
That's right. So a year ago, a week before the 2024 US election, Panorama did a one-hour special called Trump, A Second Chance. Michael Prescott, who wrote this this memo, watched the program, felt it was there was something a bit off about it, thought it was rather biased. And so he asked a colleague to have a look at it and see what they thought.
A week before the US election, BBC Panorama released a documentary called Trump, A Second Chance. And in it, they played the following clip.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you. And we fight. We fight like hell.
But Trump didn't, in fact, say this at all. The BBC spliced together two clips that took place 54 minutes apart. So let's go through it again.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you.
Now, see there, between Capitol and, that's a cut. Here's what Trump actually said.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women.
It's different. It wasn't until nearly an hour later that he then said the second part of the BBC's version.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we fight. We fight like hell.
The author of this memo says that the BBC manifestly misled its audience. And he says that if the BBC, and I'll read this part of it. He says, if BBC journalists are to be allowed to edit video in order to make people say things they never actually said, then what value are the corporation's guidelines? Why should the BBC be trusted? And where will this all end? That's his words, not mine.
Tim, can you imagine what would happen to us at The Telegraph if we took somebody's speech and spliced something from the first 5 minutes with something in the last 5 minutes and pretended it was one continuous quote?
What one sometimes does with interviews is you get quotes where you have remarks which are very far apart. And what do you do to bridge the gap? Because you don't want to put the hundreds of words in between.
Yeah.
You use ellipses.
Sure.
What I would never do is put two quotes together that create a second meaning.
Yes.
So you might cut out words in between because the person is stumbling or fumbling or they go on to a detour. But what you wouldn't do, as has clearly happened in this case, Gordon, is take two sentences, put them together to create a whole new meaning.
Somebody at the BBC has clearly said to themselves, I think Donald Trump incited the Capitol riots. Therefore, I am going to edit this or present this in a way that matches my worldview, not the view of what actually happened. Mm. And that is that, I'm afraid, is something that we have witnessed with the BBC time and time again. Isn't that what we're saying here, Gordon, really?
Well, I can't think of any examples that are as egregious as this, because this is done in such a slick way. There's no way this has happened by accident.
No.
Also, I think it's important to point out, speaking to Tim's point about how you make clear when there's a break, we're all used to seeing things where perhaps video is spliced together and there's some kind of a screen wipe or a white fade or something that makes it obvious that
Time has passed.
Exactly. There is none of that. Mm. It is very, very slick, very carefully done. There's actually three different parts of his speech that they've had to put together to make one sentence.
Yes.
And there is no way you're going to spot that if you're a viewer, and that is clearly deliberate.
Because they also cut away in terms of image. So it obviously you can't, you would see the splice if you stayed with the camera on Donald Trump. But by cutting away from Trump to a crowd, it looks like the camera's just shifted rather than it's a long time later. Yeah. A generous interpretation is they have lazily shorthanded it, because the context of this whole discussion is the debate in the US around whether or not Donald Trump incited the January 6th riot. Mm. And this is a program about, this was a program being made about, would Donald Trump be reelected? The point it wants to make is, let us remember the controversy surrounding Trump, which is that he's accused of inciting a riot against the Capitol. So here is a shorthand way of showing him doing that. But of course, if you do that, and that's a generous interpretation, you remove all the caveats that were in Trump's speech. You completely undermine his argument where he says, I told them to march peacefully. Mm. I never incited people to do it. And when they started and I saw what was happening, I told them to come back. You take all of that out. Also, so generously, it's shorthand, but I suspect not.
Also, there's a dishonesty in the distortion of making out as if Trump is ever that concise. If you wanted... No, but I've seen him speak live. I think we've all seen him speak.
You're quite right.
I'm thinking back literally...
That was the most to the point I've ever seen him.
literally a year ago this week, it will be the first anniversary of the Pittsburgh rally that I attended with our producer here, Louisa. And I couldn't believe in a way how rambling he actually was. So, of course, if you take any line out of any speech that Trump does, then you can always put it out of context. If you're taking three different lines from three different stages in a speech that is going up and down and around the houses and back again, I mean, the conciseness of making... He was speaking for, what, an hour, Gordon?
More than an hour.
More than an hour. Turning that basically for editorial purposes into, we're going to walk down to the Capitol and I'll be there with you and we fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore. I mean, that's precisely the way to do it if you actually want to create a documentary that gives a verdict to the viewer about Trump's guilt. I mean, we look to impeachment trials and whatnot for verdicts on Trump guilt. We're not meant to be getting a verdict on Trump's guilt or innocence from the national broadcaster that is supposed to be impartial, which we all pay for on a monthly stroke yearly basis.
And I think counting against my generous interpretation is the second part of the story, Gordon, which is the footage they used of the Proud Boys. This is a racist militia which sometimes turns up and claims to support Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. On the day they march towards the Capitol, they are shown in the Panorama documentary marching towards the Capitol after Trump's remarks have been shown, giving the impression that they followed his orders. Mm-hmm. The reality is very different.
The footage Panorama showed of the Proud Boys marching towards the Capitol building, seemingly spurred on by Trump's rousing speech, well, that was actually taken before he'd even addressed the crowd. In fact, the BBC themselves later published a report at odds with Panorama's own timeline.
These are the Proud Boys, another right-wing militia, seen a little earlier that morning.
Out of your boy!
Donald Trump will not appear for another hour or so, but they're already heading towards the Capitol.
They're even time-stamped the footage to show that the march began at 10:58 a.m., well before Trump's midday speech. The true chronology raises serious questions about the way in which the BBC decided to portray the events of January the 6th. In fact, the memo highlights that shortly after the first extract of Trump's speech, the now president actually said,
"I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard."
The BBC advisor who wrote this report claimed Panorama's editing was completely misleading, as Trump did not explicitly exhort supporters to go down and fight at Capitol Hill. They even pointed out that this was a key reason why he didn't face federal charges for incitement to riot.
We can make comparisons to another story that you and I covered, Gordon, back in the day.
Yeah.
This was the famous Annie Leibovitz photo shoot of the late Queen Elizabeth II. Mm-hmm. Now, in that case, the BBC was accused of making it look as if Her Majesty had stormed out of the photo shoot after Leibovitz, who's a very famous American photographer, made demands of her dress. She's there in full regalia. She's there in ermine and a crown on. And an exchange takes place where Leibovitz says, "Well, maybe we take the crown off. It's a bit too dressy." And the Queen, in her typically sort of sarcastic, kind of dry-humoured manner, turns around and said, "Too dressy. What do you think this is?" And then the viewer is shown the Queen apparently leaving the shoot, like they've had a row. It later transpires that the actual footage of her apparently storming out was actually her entering the room. There wasn't a row. It was just a moment of humour and levity in the midst of, I think, probably the Queen being made to pose for different photographs over the course of a few hours. In that instance, the controller of BBC One, Peter Fincham, was forced to resign because it was found to be such a dishonest doctoring of footage that effectively, editorial standards had been broken and somebody needed to take the rap for it. I've got to say that this is far more egregious than that. And we have a Director General in Tim Davey who has presided over a catalogue of appalling editorial decisions.
Let's remind ourselves of some of those very quickly. The first one is the Greg Wallace MasterChef scandal, which is really about personnel. In that case, staff knew about Greg Wallace's behaviour. They didn't act on it because he was the talent. But also one thinks of the Hugh Edwards scandal.
Yes.
Another was the Gaza documentary, Gaza, How to Survive a War Zone, which had to be pulled from iPlayer after it was found that the narrator was the son of a Hamas official. And it was later found by a review to breach editorial guidelines on accuracy. The BBC had to issue one of those embarrassing Blue Peter formal apologies. Mm-hmm. They do so well. And one which really touches upon Tim Davey personally is the Bob Villain story. This is during Glastonbury. This man came on stage and chanted death, death to the IDF. The BBC wasn't quick enough to cut it off. There was a debate about whether or not they should have broadcast it. But also Tim Davey was actually present in Glastonbury when this happened.
And it remained on the footage for some hours afterwards.
Yeah.
Gordon, come on, how many catastrophes does this man have to preside over before he takes vicarious responsibility for it?
Well, I think this looks really bad for Tim Davey and possibly also for Samir Shah, the BBC chairman. Samir Shah hasn't been in the job that long, but this letter, which does mention, by the way, the Crown Gate scandal and the fact that that did lead to a senior resignation, the letter makes clear that Tim Davey and Samir Shah were told about all of this and did nothing. So it may be that they might want to blame people who were further down the chain. They may want to blame the person who edited that Panorama programme. They may want to blame Jonathan Munro, who is the one of the heads of BBC News, who had said when this Panorama was brought up, he said, "Oh, there's no problem. It's normal to edit speeches into short-form clips."
Can I just stop you there? Jonathan Munro's name once again being mentioned in light of a BBC scandal. Mm-hmm. Let's please not forget Munro's role in not dealing adequately with the Panorama interview that Martin Bashir did with Princess Diana, which was later revealed in a review to have involved him literally doctoring slips and checks that had apparently been paid to people for betraying Princess Diana. Like, literally, he did not act in the face of some of the most nefarious journalistic tactics employed in comparison to phone hacking. I mean, what Bashir did was just absolutely abhorrent. And again, Munro's name keeps on coming up. The other problem with the BBC is These names keep on coming up about people who have presided over editorial disasters, and they just get promoted.
Yeah. Yeah, they fail upwards.
Public sector.
I'd be very surprised if there aren't some senior sackings or resignations over this. And as I say, I think the fact that Tim Davie and Samir Shah had prior knowledge of all of this, did nothing, makes it very hard for them.
What is the state of the BBC's own contract renewal? Where do things
Charter
stand?
Renewal is 2027.
Right.
And Lisa Nandy has said nothing is off the table when it comes to BBC funding.
Right. Realistically, is Labour likely to insist it moves to a subscription model or it loses the licence fee? Or?
Well, I don't know, but I'm sure Lisa Nandy will now be aware of all of this.
Yep.
And I suspect that she will want answers.
The tricky thing is that because it involves Trump, a lot of people in the establishment instinctively feel that Trump is fair game.
Mm.
Or, again, to be generous, that Trump himself tells so many lies that it's difficult to sift through them to pull out something that you can report without yourself in some way being contaminated by those lies.
It actually goes further than that. If you walk into that building in Portland Place and you express a pro-Trump sentiment in the same way that if you expressed a pro-Brexit sentiment or a pro-right sentiment, most of the editorial staff would look at you with a mixture of barely concealed disgust and condemnation. I'm sorry, I've done a lot in the past for the BBC. I'm always happy to appear because I think they desperately need some balance in the people that they platform. But inherently, inside that editorial team, they are anti-Trump, pro-Democrat, you know, they were pro-Remain. We know that. Mm. I don't know why we keep on skirting around this issue of, oh, no, we're resolutely impartial. You can go and do a paper review for the BBC and know exactly where the sentiments of most of the editorial staff lie.
Yeah.
It's like this strange, it's not even an open secret. It's an open, it's an open fact.
But that's fine so long as they, so long as they tell the truth.
No, but this is the thing about it. You know, you go to events. I've been to plenty of events with Tim Davie, with the Jonathan Monroes of this world. These people glide about like they are the sort of journalistic nectar to the gods, that they are a cut above everyone else. Because don't you know, we're at the BBC and you look at the quality of some of the journalism and you say to yourself, we're actually paying for this.
Mm.
You know, and then the very same people at their dinner parties and at their events will be slagging off the Telegraph, slagging off the people at the Daily Mail. Well, at least we might actually apply some journalistic rigour that would mean that we wouldn't take a more than an hour-long speech and splice it into one convenient soundbite that matches our own editorial agenda. And by the way, at least we are honest about, yeah, we're a right-leaning newspaper. It's the dishonesty of we're resolutely impartial when everybody knows that on many different occasions they've proved themselves to be completely the opposite. Mm. This is what gets me. It's the hypocrisy of it.
Mm.
We're all above everybody else. You know, the media show, we'll opine on the state of journalism. The media show should literally just be dedicated to the mistakes the BBC makes.
And by the way, the Trump, the Panorama is just one of the things that are picked out in this memo in terms of anti-Trump bias. There are nine other examples that he gives. It would take a while to go through them all, but they are many. And as you can imagine, a lot of it is around not holding Kamala Harris to account and holding Trump to account an awful lot.
Oh, surprise, surprise. Mm-hmm. Do you think Davie is going to have to go over this?
I do think his position is going to be very difficult because, as I said, he knew about all of this and didn't seem to think it was a problem. And how you can not think that's a problem is impossible to understand.
Also, why should deputy heads always roll?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're the director general.
Yeah.
It's not just been one thing. It's been a string of calamities. Something's gone wrong. Something's gone terribly wrong on your watch. We haven't even began with COVID. We haven't even got into COVID. And the absolute mass hysteria and panic, the BBC's constant obsession with the death rate caused among an entire populace. We haven't even dealt with this. It's all happened over the course of the last 5 years. We can talk about BBC bias extending well beyond that. But the last 5 years have been an unmitigated disaster for the BBC. And if the Director General doesn't take responsibility for that, I don't know who should.
Mm-hmm. There's a culture problem, and the culture is set by the man at the top. I agree with that.
The BBC have given us a statement in response to our story. They say, while we don't comment on leaked documents, when the BBC receives feedback, it takes it seriously and considers it carefully. Michael Prescott is a former advisor to a board committee where differing views and opinions of our coverage are routinely discussed and debated.
Gordon, thank you very much. You will be reporting further on this story, I have a feeling.
I will. There's quite a lot more to come.
And we await the response from the White House.